Who? Okay. So my lesson tonight, is that too loud? I hope not. Is on the blind man. And throughout this whole summer series, we've been learning about what can we learn about with encounters with Jesus. And mine happens to be on the blind man. So I'm going to read from John chapter 9, verses 1 through 11. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he would be born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me as long as it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." When he had said this, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle and applied the clay to the blind man's eyes. And he said to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam." So he went away and washed and came back seeing. Therefore the neighbors and those who previously saw him as a beggar were saying, "Is not this the one who used to sit and beg?" Others were saying, "This is he." Still others were saying, "No, but he is like him." He kept saying, "I am the one." So they were saying to him, "How then were your eyes opened?" He answered, "The man who is called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' So I went away and washed, and I received sight." And actually, that right there is what archaeologists have discovered as the remains of the Pool of Siloam, which I thought was pretty cool. So why was this man born blind? Yes, it says in the, Jesus answered, they asked him, why was this man born blind? And he said, not that he sinned or his parents sinned, he wasn't punished for that or anything, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. So when I was preparing this lesson or thinking about this lesson and reading the verses that we had to, that they gave to us that we had to read and everything, I was like, that struck me about this man was born blind, and it was also that the works of God might be displayed in him. And I thought this lesson, I've been wanting to either study on or hear a good lesson about like pain and suffering and evil and how do we cope with that? How do we deal with evil, pain, and suffering? And I thought this was a good, I realized that this is a good lesson right here with the blind man. He said, why was he born blind? And Jesus says, so as the works of God might be displayed in him. So, if you think about it, this man was born blind, so he suffered his entire life with this blindness. And his parents had to take care of him. So they had to sacrifice. And they had pain. He had pain. And Jesus said it was all so that the works of God may be displayed in him. So like, what can we learn about evil, pain, and suffering? How can this teach us and how can this help us? There's that. I don't have that on him. Anybody ever heard of this guy? So, no hands are going up. Epicurus, he was a Greek philosopher, and he, of course, read, he was before Christ, 342 to 270 BC. which is a little interesting side note. They don't use BC and AD anymore. I don't know if anybody knew that. I don't think it's politically correct anymore to use that. But anyways, he was before Christ, and he made popular the argument, or he may even came up with it. But it goes, and I'm sure you've heard something similar to this, and I'm kind of paraphrasing. He stated, if God is all-powerful and all-good, then why does he allow evil, pain, and suffering in the world? If he was all-powerful, he could stop it, right? If he was all-good, wouldn't he want to stop it? So that, you know, makes you think. It makes people think. Yeah, I mean, you just think about it. Yeah, if he's all-good, why doesn't he stop evil, pain, and suffering in the world? He's all-powerful, he can do it. That's how we think. What do you think? You ever heard that argument before? I see some heads shaking.
I used to have excessive migraines, and I always thought it made me look for a heavenly home for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, hopefully I'll touch on something like that too. If you take that argument and you just kind of think about it, you really got to think about it. And there's been books written on this subject. There's, you know, I've found several articles and studies done on evil, pain, and suffering in the world and for or against God, you know, all this stuff. But there's a fallacy in the argument. It assumes that no good can come from God allowing pain and suffering in the world. So hopefully I will go through and hopefully answer some questions and just make you think a little bit, hopefully. Now, I think this, the blind man, I think it does teach you, it's a good lesson in this subject. And this subject, evil, pain, and suffering, is one of the biggest causes of unbelief that people, you know, go through in the world. It causes a lot of people to turn away from God. Some people, I'm sure you've heard of this guy. And some people may not know that he was a Christian. He believed in God. And, of course, through his work. And then there was an event in his life that just where his oldest daughter died, and that caused him to finally abandon his faith in God. And then, of course, his life's work on evolution has turned, you know, countless people away from God. Another famous person. He was a Christian, and he had several quotes about God and religion and everything, good quotes and everything, but he also, I don't know if he totally turned away from God, but he was very mad at God because his daughter also died at a young age. I'll read another famous person here. I'm sure you've heard of him, but I'll save it, see if you can figure out who it is. In the mid-1960s, a devoutly religious young man from Chattanooga, Tennessee, was a role model for all his classmates. He led a prayer group and planned to become a foreign missionary until tragedy struck his family. His sister died of leukemia, and his father committed suicide. The boy's belief in God collapsed, and he went on to become one of America's most outspoken unbelievers, pro-abortionist, abortion advocate, and the founder of CNN and TBS, Ted Turner. So you can imagine if he would have stayed the course, you know, through Christianity, what could he have accomplished, you know, with his power and influence and, you know, being on CNN, TBS all the time. He could have been a very good advocate for God. But, you know, he was... But the tragedy in his life turned him away from God. He couldn't deal with how can I be a good God and still this tragedy happening. So what is the origin of evil, pain, and suffering in the world? And think way back when, in Genesis 2:16-17, the Lord God commanded the man, saying, "From any tree of the garden you may eat freely, but from the tree of knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat. For in the day that you eat from it, you will surely die." And of course we know that they did eat from it, and that's what brought the pain and evil and disease and everything into the world. They were separated from the tree of life. The tree of life made things all perfect. You know, as you know, God created the Garden of Eden, created the world, it was perfect. It was complete and perfect. But when they got separated from that tree of life, that's when all the, you know, sin caused all this to, that original sin caused it all to happen. Can we define pain and suffering? Now I thought, you can see that up there. A lot of people handle pain differently, don't they? Like this right here. Saw a TV show one time, and it was about doctors. It was a comedy and everything, and they were talking about how people handle pain differently. And he said a man comes into the ER, and he had a hangnail. And he's like, "Oh, this has to be the worst pain anybody has ever felt in the history of mankind." And then the next guy comes in with he's either a knife in his back or in his head. And they said, "Oh my gosh, how'd you get that knife in your back?" And he goes, "What knife?" So, you know, people handle pain a lot differently. And, you know, some say women can handle more pain than men can handle. And there's studies that show that and everything. And I read a study on where they were just testing, it was a simple study, but they had to stick their hand in a bucket of ice water and see how long they can hold that there. If you've never tried that, it is very painful. We did it at work for something stupid. And it was almost instantly painful. But if you stuck with it. But in this study, they determined that redheaded females could handle the pain better than anybody else could. Which I don't know what importance that is, but. And it's all about like perspective, you know. I read a story, I don't know if you guys ever read any like Chicken Soup for the Soul books. If you read those books, you know, they're a lot of good stories in them, and they make you cry all the time. They're pretty good. But the story, I don't know how well. He's holding a coin. And the story was, it was about a guy that was, I think he was a social worker, and he was picking up this little boy, you know, 7 or 8 years old, something like that, from a foster home. And he was talking about the boy and about the tragedies in his life. And, you know, his parents didn't want him. And he'd been through different, you know, foster homes and different foster parents and all this stuff and abuse and all this stuff. And he said, you know, at such an early age, he's been through so much. And he said when the boy was about ready to get in his car, he's going to take him to another home or something. And the boy found a coin on the ground right before he got into the car, and he picked it up and said, "Huh, quarter, must be my lucky day." And it's just his outlook on life. You know, the kid's life was, you know, not very lucky. And the way the boy looked at it, it was his lucky day. He just found a quarter, you know. And so it's a lot of perspective on pain and suffering. Is it good or bad? Can you answer, is pain, suffering good, or is it bad? And I guess it's... Yeah. When it's happening to you, it doesn't feel very good. But, like, it can be good, right? I mean, if you touch a hot stove, yeah, it's going to burn you, but you're going to learn, don't touch that anymore. It teaches us. Pain tells us something is wrong. Like, grab your chest, something, you know, pain in your chest, something's wrong. So what are you going to do? You're going to go try to get it taken care of. You know, pain anywhere on your body, you're going, something's wrong with that. I better protect it. I better fix it. So, you know, that kind of pain is good. Basically, all pain is the same. You know, there's something wrong with you. So if you didn't have that pain, you wouldn't know. Like, I know some people with diabetes or whatever, they start losing feeling in their legs and stuff like that, and they could get a cut and not even know it, and get infected and not know it, you know, that kind of, I've heard stories about that before, say, because they can't feel pain. Also, some pain, you know, it's baby getting a shot, it's going to be painful, they're going to cry and they're going to suffer a little bit. Can't look at that, kid. But it's necessary, and there's a lot of different pains and sufferings throughout the world. You know, these are just simple examples. But in Genesis 3:17, this is in the King James and the New King James Version. If you read it, it says, "Then to Adam he said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for your sake, and toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life." Now, in the study I got this from, the guy took that, the words there, cursed is the ground for your sake. And he took it to mean it's for your benefit. Cursed is the ground for your benefit. And of course, other translations say because of you, not for your sake. But if you really think about it and how it all works, like the ground wasn't cursed, we had no pain and everything like that, you know. That was the perfect Garden of Eden world. But once sin entered in, doesn't have that anymore. But this study where he says, for your sake, you know, that it's good. It's really a good thing that you have to work now. You are going to feel pain. That pain can draw you closer to me. You know? So that's the idea he came from. Does anybody know who this is? Yes, Helen Keller. Of course, it's a blind man's study. I got to throw Helen Keller in here. I'm sure most everybody knows the story of Helen Keller. You know, she wasn't born blind or deaf, but at a very young age, like 18 months, I think it was, or something, she got like a sickness, disease or something, and it caused her to go blind and deaf. So, you know, the story of her life, you know, the movie, they made several movies about her, and she went on to write, you know, several books, like over 10 to 12 books or something like that, and she was a women's rights activist and a political activist and a speaker and all this, and she had some good sayings. And, you know, she lived a pretty good life. It says, helping your fellow man is one's only excuse for being in this world, and doing things to help one's fellows lays the secret of lasting happiness. And, you know, if you've ever seen the movie, you know, she struggled, she suffered, she had pain, and it just depends on how you deal with that. It can make or break you, really. She also had another good saying that I about this. She was introduced to Christianity at a young age, you know, as I think in her upper teens or early 20s or something. And after learning about God and everything, she said, "I always knew He was there, but I didn't know His name," which I thought was pretty powerful because, you know, she always knew, even when she was young and, you know, blind, deaf, and, you know, they say dumb, she didn't know anything, but she knew that there was, you know, there was a something there, and she just didn't know who he was. And one of the things I like to use to help understand, like, life on earth and why we go through what we go through, and comparing that to heaven and eternity. Eternity in heaven and the size of the universe. It's hard to contemplate what eternity is. And, you know, we know life on earth, you know. Average person lives, you know, depending on man or woman, it's, you know, 82 or 78, you know. We know that time frame. But what is eternity? You know, how can we, you know, grasp eternity? And I try to compare it to, like, how do we grasp, you know, we can figure out the size of the universe and things like that. And I thought there were some interesting things to try to start grasping how big eternity is, how big, you know, and use the universe. You can see that. I don't know if you, I just found this out or just realized this, but Earth is right over here, farthest one over, and that one over there, the wee little dot, is the moon. So you can actually fit all the other planets in between us and the Earth. That's how far away the moon actually is. It's some 200 and, what is it? 250,000 miles, roughly. It, of course, it changes. So, like, and I used this to teach kids one time. And to try to judge those distances, and, you know, we always think, how far away is, we just went to vacation to Florida last week, and we drove. So it was like some 850 miles. So just say if you average 70 miles an hour, which you can't, but if you average 70 miles an hour, how long would it take you to get to Florida? And it's like 12 hours, a little over 12 hours. That's straight driving 70 miles an hour, nonstop, you know, and if you do that, it feels like eternity, really. Just the way it seemed like it took forever. So, if you drove around the Earth at 70 miles an hour, that's what we usually drive, 70 miles an hour, how long do you think it'd take you to drive around the Earth? And it's just distances we know. If you could, 70 miles an hour straight, nonstop, it would take you 14.8 days to drive around the Earth. Now, if you could drive to the moon at 70 miles an hour, you know, and the moon's right there. We can see it. It's right there. How long do you think it'd take you to drive to the moon at 70 miles an hour straight? It'll take you 144 days of straight driving just to get to the moon. And it's like the closest thing to us in space. Now the sun, you know, sun's right there. We can see the sun. It's some 94 million miles away. How long do you think it'd take? 70 miles an hour. It's right there. You know, the sun's right there. It would take you 154 years to get to the sun. Now I got Pluto on here. Pluto used to be a planet. It's actually not on there. Used to be a planet. Anyways, it's like 2.9 billion miles away. At 70 miles an hour, it would take you 4,806 years just to get to Pluto, which is still in our solar system. Okay, then after that, after it gets so long, we quit measuring in miles because it gets to be, you know, just in our, we start measuring in light years. And a light year is actually a distance. Light moves so fast that it can go approximately 186,000 miles in 1 second. That means in a year, light can go almost 6 trillion miles. So you know, our solar system, all the planets we know, whatever, is in the Milky Way galaxy. So the Milky Way galaxy is like, well, let me see here. So if we look, you know, we look up in the sky, we can see like 3,000 something stars just with our naked eye. And that's like pretty much stars in our galaxy. If we use a simple telescope, we can see like 100,000 stars. And that's not all the stars in our own galaxy. So the Milky Way galaxy is like 102,000 light years across. So it gets kind of hard to judge these distances. And you start thinking about these distances compared to time and eternity in heaven. Eternity, big as our Milky Way galaxy, well, it's bigger. And our Milky Way galaxy would take 100,000 years at the speed of light just to get across our galaxy. 100,000 years of moving at 186,000 miles per second. It would take 100,000 years just to get across our galaxy. The known universe is estimated to have over 1 billion galaxies, just like our galaxy. Bigger, smaller. 1 billion galaxies. I mean, our universe is you can't even comprehend the size of that. So how do we comprehend the size of eternity in heaven compared to our little life on earth? You know, in 2 Corinthians, it's hard to read these now. 2 Corinthians 4:16-18. Therefore we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For momentary light affliction, in our momentary small affliction that we face on earth, is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, they're short time. But the things which are not seen are eternal. In James 4:14, yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Our life on earth, you know, compared to eternity in heaven, is just like a vapor that we see, and it just disappears. I forgot to show you that. That's our galaxy right there. Or something very similar to our galaxy. And we would just be a little pinpoint just in that. You can even see the solar system. Sorry about that. So, and in Job 8:9, for we are only of yesterday and know nothing, because our days on earth are as a shadow. Other thoughts, we'll get to this. Other thoughts that may help us understand evil, pain, and suffering in the world. If you really get into the study of this, and they all say, God created us with free will. And because of that, he loved us. That's why he gave us free will. And, of course, with free will, you know, he didn't want robots. He didn't want, you know, he didn't want slaves. He wanted people that really to love him on their own, you know, their own volition. But with free will comes wrong choices, bad decisions. And then those bad decisions, of course, have consequences to them. If there were no consequences with our bad decisions, we wouldn't learn, would we? We wouldn't learn to choose the good and reject what is bad. You know, because why would we? There'd be no consequences either way. You know, if there was no consequences, it wouldn't matter. We could do whatever we wanted. So, with free will came all those bad decisions that people have made for thousands and thousands of years. And we suffer because of that. We suffer from personal wrong choices, our own wrong choices we make. You know, we make bad decisions all the time. And we suffer, even sometimes we know, you know, this ain't going to be good for me, but I'm so stupid, I'm going to do it anyways. So, you know, we suffer because of our own personal choices, you know. Just you know, think of anything, you know, just your diet. These are poor choices. And if it's a bad diet, you're going to suffer for it. We suffer because of personal wrong choices of others. This is a big one, you know. There's so many people in the world, and look at all the people that's existed from day one. You know, we suffer because wrong choices other people made. You know, not because it's because we're being punished for it. It's just because of the consequences of those choices. Drunk drivers, you know, 10,000 people, just in the United States, around 10,000 people die every year because of drunk drivers. You know, personal wrong choices of other people. Personal wrong choices of past generations. You know, if we reap the benefits of their good choices, and, you know, and advances in science and democracy and all this stuff, and if you benefit from their good choices, you know, you still have to pay for their bad choices, you know, just because of the consequences that carry on down. One example was the article gave was people in India starve because, you know, their ancestors turned away from God, made a bad choice, and now they worship cows, you know, and starving people have food walking right in front of them and they don't eat them because they worship them. Adam and Eve, you know, it all started. They made personal bad choices, and that's what brought evil, pain, and suffering in the world, sickness and disease. You know, people say, well, what about natural disasters? You know, is that bad choices? And this could be a whole study on its own, but it's very interesting. And that's why I have this picture up here. Many scholars believe, and I think this is a very good study, that the Genesis flood, of course, you know, that the earth was very different before the flood than it was after. You do a study on it. It's very interesting. The Genesis flood drastically altered the geophysical features of the earth, which in turn now cause all the earthquakes and hurricanes, tornadoes, you know, just because of the, you know, even the earth's surface before the flood was very different than after the flood. You can imagine what that much water can do. You know, we see floods, there's flooding right now, and, you know, down south. You know, floods cause massive devastation, and they kill a lot of people. Imagine, you know, why did they have the Genesis flood? Because of the sinful people that lived in the world at that time. You know, God created the flood to get rid of them. So that flood, massive flood, would totally reshape the earth's surface. And, you know, now because you have high mountains, you have low valleys, you have deserts, and all this different geological and meteorological differences and temperatures and all this stuff. That's what causes, you know, all the hurricanes and tornadoes, you know. And if you happen to live in an area, you know, you could say, I made a bad choice by living in, you could say that, you know, it's, I probably shouldn't say that, but you know, if you live in Florida, you know, you're probably good chance you're going to get hit by a hurricane. You live in Oklahoma, you're good chance a tornado could tear your house away and kill you. You know, you build your house in a stream valley, good chance, big storm, big flood, will wash your house away. So there's just other things to help you understand how evil, pain, and suffering came into the world. And it's not because of God. It's because man's wrong choices, bad choices. God created the world perfect, you know, and then through Adam and Eve, that's what entered in. And we just pay for the consequences for that. Not as a punishment. You know, and God, you know, He created the world with physical laws. That's how the world works. And we depend on those laws. You know, like people, you know, some people say, why can't He just step in and stop that flood or step in? And, you know, wouldn't He, that would, you know, couldn't He do that? I said, well, if you really look at that and study about that, He would be breaking the physical laws that He created all the time, which then we couldn't depend, you know, if we depend on the law of gravity, we know what it's going to do, you know. But if he stepped in and changed it all the time, and people couldn't depend on it anymore. And there's a lot of more things about that. But oops, wrong way. So the mind of God, ultimately, when it comes down to it, you know, other than what God has revealed to us in His Word, the mind and purposes of God are unknown to man. You know, we have the Bible, and we can learn a lot about evil, pain, and suffering in the Bible. And that's where you should, you know, first turn to the Bible and do a study on it. But, you know, as Doug pointed out in his lesson, he said from Isaiah 55, 8, 9, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. And Romans 11, 33, 34, O the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are His judgments and unfathomable His ways. For who has known the mind of the Lord, or who became His counselor? Now, the world was never intended to be our final home. You know, it's just, you know, compared to eternity, our life on earth is just, you know, nothing, a speck of dust. And ultimately, God is sovereign. Do you know what sovereign means? I learned this, what this means during this study. Sovereign. It means He's the supreme power and authority. He created us. Who are we to question Him? You know. You know, we ask why, you know, why us, why me, why, you know, why did this happen? You know, then we get mad at God. You know, first, you know, we get mad at God, and you know, I've done it. And really think about it. Who are we? You know, He created us. And we don't know. You know, we know nothing compared to what He knows. We have a very small view of life and the whole picture. Like in Job 33:13, one of Job's friends says, you know, Job was mad at God and questioning Him. And Elihu was his name, says, why do you contend with Him? For He does not give an accounting of any of His words. So, how can we use the blind man example to help us understand? And have you ever been inspired by someone who suffered greatly and, say, triumphed from it? You know, have you ever? You know, I'm sure everybody knows somebody that's suffered and may have learned, or they've said something, and you're like, wow, you know, or suffered and lost. You know, you still learn, and they still learn. There's always something that I always think of. Always, you ever heard Dr. Kevorkian, and you know, and he helped these people commit suicide, basically. And really thinking, you know, you're not supposed to commit suicide, but, you know, that was very controversial at the time. And I always thought, back then, I always thought, that person, if they were just, you know, I'm sure they were in tremendous pain and, you know, they suffered and everything, but maybe there was that one word that they may have told a loved one that on their deathbed, or, you know, might have been that one word that just changed that loved one's life forever, you know. And but they cut that short, they committed suicide, you know. And this right here, I wasn't going to use this, but you know, that's a, you know what that is, cross stitch pattern. And one of the articles I read, and I think, oh, that was pretty cool. But then I got to thinking about it more and more. It's like he said, we look up, and you know, we see, that's like from Earth, we look up and see that, you know, we see the ugliness and the, all the, you know, the different, just, you know, we don't see the picture, you know, we see the, all the bad stuff and all that. But if you, you know, you flip that over, well, did I miss it? There it is. You flip that over, just imagine that above you, all we see is the bottom of it. God's looking down, that's what he sees. He sees the whole picture. He sees the beauty and the intricacies of life and how it all fits together. You know, he sees the whole picture, and we only see, you know, the bad stuff. So, you know, in the whole scheme, you know, you think about the blind man. He suffered his whole life being blind, but there was a purpose for that. And Jesus healed him, and now his life after that, I mean, you can imagine that changed a lot of people's minds, and so on and so forth. And maybe the pain and suffering we face on earth helps us grow, helps us get closer to God. And, you know, it's easy to stand up here and say that. You know, if you don't have, maybe, you know, right now I don't have pain, evil, suffering in my life, you know, so I can get up here and preach about it. But somebody, maybe somebody sitting here has a lot of struggles, a lot of suffering going on. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to talk about it and look at the whole, you know, all these things about it if you don't have it going on in your life. But if you do, it's harder, much harder to accept it. And if, you know, it is a difficult thing. But if I did have, you know, a lot of struggle and pain, I would hope that with, you know, being a Christian, I'd hope I would turn to God instead of turning away from God. You know, because, you know, if you just look at the whole picture, you know, I thought, and this, if you could, I don't know, if you could, would you live a whole life on earth with pain and, you know, knowing that you're going to go to heaven? Like if they told you, yeah, you're going to have years of pain, but you're going to heaven. You know, compared to that little time on earth of pain and struggle and suffering, is it worth eternity in heaven without that, you know, with, you know, I guess perfection in heaven, no pain, no tears? I thought, what's, you know, I would just hope I would, if tragedy struck my life, I'd pray and hope that I would turn to God and not turn away from God. And I guess that's